Tonight's Shear is on another part of McGill Sester, and the title of the show tonight is Haman's Convincing Arguments. So tonight we're going to look at a couple psukim in the third parak, where Haman convinces Achashverosh to let him destroy the Jews, and we'll try to understand how Haman approached the argument to Achashverosh from two different perspectives. So we're going to look through the psukim and kind of point out some of the obvious questions. If anybody has any questions, just stop me. And then we'll try to go into the different explanations. Hopefully, I think we'll have two main approaches to how Haman tried to convince Achashverosh to let him destroy the Jewish people. So if you look in source number one, it's Esther Perek Gimel, Pasuk Ches. I'm going to read through the Psukim as usual. It says, Vayomer Haman, Lamelech Achashverosh, Yeshno Amechad, Mefuzar, Umeforad, Bein Ha'amim, Bechol Medinos, Malchusecha, Vedazehem, Shonos, Mikol Am, Vestaseh Amelech Inamosim, Velamelech Ein Shovel Hanicham. So Haman's first pasuk is very critical in terms of the shir, and he says to Achashverosh, there's a certain nation out there, an individual, unique nation that's scattered and separated amongst the other nations in all of your kingdom, and their laws are different from every other nation, and they don't do the king's laws, and there's no use for the king to allow them to exist. So if it's good for the king, if the king wills it, so he'll decree to destroy the Jewish people, or to destroy them, and I'll give you 10,000 talents of silver. So what happens is the king gives Haman the seal, the famous ring, and he gives it to Haman, the enemy of the Jews. So Achashverosh ends up rejecting the money. He doesn't take the money. And he ends up saying to Haman, do what you want with the Jewish people. And that's the beginning of the story of how the Jews, there's a decree from Haman, based on Achashverosh's permission, to destroy the Jewish people, and the whole story of Purim. So the question, there's a couple questions on this argument of Haman. So I just want to take up a couple questions. So the main question, which was the first question that I started this year with, is what's the strategy here? Why is Haman, or what's Haman's approach in terms of trying to convince Achashverosh to destroy the Jewish people? But there's a couple interesting elements to the argument. So one element is that the Jewish people are never mentioned explicitly. So if you look through the Psukim, it never says the Jews. It just says there's a nation. It's almost hidden who he's referring to, who Haman's referring to. So the question is, why did he do that? What was Haman's reasoning in terms of not mentioning the Jews by name? And then lastly, why didn't Achashverosh take the money? So Haman offers him money in exchange for this permission to destroy the Jews. And Achashverosh says, "Akesef nasan lach," in Pasuk Yud Aleph, take the money, I don't need it. Do what you want. So the question is, why didn't he take the money? So we have three questions, really, on the Psukim. One is, you know, what was the strategy? And the second is, why weren't the Jews mentioned explicitly? And the third question is, in the end, Achashverosh says, do what you want, but he doesn't take the money that Haman offers him. So why? So let's answer all those questions. Those are the main questions of the Shir. So if we look in Rashi, source number two, he gives us the Pshat. He says, V'estaseh ha-melech, l'aseis masla avodas ha-melech. So for some reason, he says that, Rashi says the Jews never paid taxes to the king. Ein shoveh, I'm not sure why, but it says ein shoveh, ein chashash, klomar ein betza. You don't profit from them. So part of his argument, according to the pshat of Rashi, is that you're not gaining anything by this nation. Yikasev l'abdom, yikasev sfarim l'shloch l'sarei medinos l'abdom. So the request that Haman made was that this be written, that the Jews be destroyed and it be sent out. Vayasar melech estabato, hu matan kol davar gadol shish alu meis hamelech lios mi shatabas biyado shalit b'chol davar melech. It's basically permission. When the king gives you his ring, his seal, it gives you permission on the authority of the king to do what you want. And it's a great gift that the king gives you. So Rashi doesn't really help us in terms of understanding the depth of the argument of Haman. So I just wanted to bring in Rashi. It's important to always look at Rashi when you're looking at the pshat. But we want to understand and answer all those questions. You know, why did he leave the Jews out in his argument? What's his strategy? And why doesn't Achashverosh take the money? Okay, so let's look at the Malbim. The Malbim on this set of Psukim, I think, is a really interesting idea. And I think with the Malbim, he doesn't say explicitly, but we'll try to give a svara, try to give a theory as to what the Malbim is really getting at in terms of Haman's strategy and answer all our questions. Okay, so the first, look in source number 3. It says, Vayomer Haman, Hamavuar Shahaman Ganav Eslev Achashverosh Bishnei Dvarim. So Haman stole Achashverosh's heart. So immediately the Malbim says that Haman's strategy was one of Gneva. He was trying to deceive Achashverosh. Echad, how do you do that? Echad Shaloh Diolo Mihu Ha'amazesh Shemal Shin Aleham. So the first idea is that he didn't mention the nation. That was one of our questions. He never mentions the nation explicitly, which is interesting. She'imaya Achashverosh Yodea, She'imay Yehudim, Shahayu Mefursamim, Lo'am Chacham Menavon, Lo'haya Shamea La'atasa. So the reasoning is that if Haman had started out with the Jews, if he said it openly, Achashverosh, he knew of the Jews, and they had a reputation for being intelligent, so he wouldn't have destroyed them. V'chein, afal am acher hayoser shafal v'nivze, imaya omer lo shekavanasu lashmidam, even if it was a lesser nation than the Jews, gam kein lo hayashamelo, Achashverosh wouldn't have listened to him. Aval haman baramaso amar yeshno am echad, im habilti mefursam achiyet einu yachal lachanoso b'shem. So Haman in his craftiness didn't explicitly state the nation, and he says he doesn't even say it outright. Okay? So what's the idea? First, before we move on, so what's the idea? What's the concept? Maybe somebody on the phone line can try to help out, but what's the concept of Haman not mentioning the name of the people? What's gained by that? Why would he not mention the Jews? The Malbim says that Achashverosh wouldn't have listened. If he mentioned the Jews, he wouldn't have listened. So why not? Why would that have been such a bad move on the part of Haman? So that's the question.
Because maybe he's trying to make any identification, just put it as a generic thing, that the king should not have any picture of who these people are, or have any emotions toward them, or any identification towards them.
Exactly. So that's what I was thinking. I was thinking the same exact thing. Basically, the idea is that it's much harder to kill somebody that you know. It's the more details you get about a person, the harder it is to harm them, because you start identifying with them. So if you know, let's say if you know somebody has a family and somebody, for example, or somebody similar to you in some sense, it makes it more difficult to destroy that person or to harm them. So I agree. So I think the first approach is that Haman recognized that Achashverosh didn't want to know what was going on. He didn't want to know openly. He didn't want it out in the open. And Haman knew that if he brought it out openly, it would create a potential identification on the part of Achashverosh. And ultimately, he might refuse. He might reject the plan based on that identification. So Haman was very strategic and very smart in this sense. So the first move that Haman made is to try to break any sense of identification with the people that he was attempting to destroy. Okay, so that's the first move. Go ahead.
It seems his question might be saying it's a matter of intimidation. Then he mentioned that the Jews are a smart nation. Perhaps if he was able to actually sort of picture the nation, if they were mentioned by name, and he could sort of see what he's up against clearly in his mind, he wouldn't have risked it.
That's another approach we're going to get to later on. You'll see in the shir when we get to the Gemara. It's more in line with that approach. So we'll see when we get to the Gemara. But I think it's more in line. I agree with the first possibility that it's more in line with, it's not a risk. It's more in line with Haman's strategy to try to make it anonymous so that Achashverosh wouldn't have any resistance, so that he wouldn't identify with the people. So, but we'll see later on. You'll see that your approach is more in line with the Gemara. So we'll take it up later. Okay, so let's just move on. So the Malbim. So the first idea, just based on the pshat of the Mal and the Malbim's bringing out, is that idea, that concept, that his first point in his strategy was to try to not bring up any element of identification on the part of Achashverosh. Okay, so let's keep going. So he says, "Vayan shirata lal shinam shemazikim l'chol amim." So his attempt, what was he trying to do? He was trying to show that, he was trying to speak poorly about this nation and trying to show that they're damaging other nations. Im be'emunosam ve'im b'hanhaga hamedinas, though in their faith and also in the way that they act. V'yadua shim am levadad yishkon b'medina miyuchedes af shiyu hayoser gruim lo yaziku l'amim acherim hashochnim b'medinos acheros. So if they were just isolated and they weren't bothering other people, וכן אם אף ישכנו בין עמים אחרים במדינותיהם, אם על כל פנים בכל מדינה ששוכנים בה יש להם ערים נידחים, but if they were, even if they lived amongst other people, if they were separated, they had their own cities, this nation, גם כן אין שכונסם מזיק. So, ולא יקבד המלך לעבדם, so Achashverosh wouldn't have destroyed them if they just were these loners, if the Jews were the loners and they didn't bother other people, so he wouldn't have destroyed them. Al kein hiktim shu am mefuzar lahotzi she'en lahem medina acher miuchedes. So he wanted to say that that's why Haman's approach was they're mefuzar, that they're scattered, that they don't have any independent nation, state. V'gam mefurad lahotzi she'gam medina she'shoknim sham lo yishchenu ba'arim pratim rak mefuradim nimtzam b'chol shkuna v'shkuna. So the next move is that Haman's trying to show that the Jews are like a virus. That this nation, although he doesn't say the Jews, but this nation's a virus. They don't live separately. They're not isolated, but rather they live amongst the people, and there's some negative there. He says, "V'lo b'ktzas medinos, rak b'chol amim asher b'chol medinos malchusecha." They're all over the kingdom of Ofen shehezek hanimshach mehem kol kol amim, and the damage that they do affects all the nations in your kingdom. V'ata hischil l'saper shnei ha'izekos ha'kolios hanimshachos mehem. So the first move of Haman, the next move, after he doesn't identify who they are, who he's speaking about, is to show that they're also having a negative effect on the kingdom as a whole. And in what way are they doing that? So the Malbim continues. He says there's two main ways. Be'amunos, kidaseyam, shonos mikol am. Their laws are different, and their belief system, uklal b'zeh shlosh advarim, it includes three things. Shinui hadasa yisraeli miyesra dasos. So the religion is completely different than other religions. Shagam, and that's Aleph, Beis, Shagam, Shekol, Das, V'Das, Behechrech, Yeh, Mishuna, Midas, Zulaso, Mikol, Makom, Lo, Yishtana, Rak, Be'akra, V'Sharashav, Abal, Bipratem, Yishchabra, V'Yishtachtvu. So most nations have different basic principles. But in terms of the details, people can join up with the people around them. Aval bedas haYisraeli nimtzu bo dasos shonos umitzvos rabos chalukos achin nechshav lahar bedasos v'chol dasos aela nevdalos mishunos mikol dasei amim v'leisdam v'aleim b'shem davar. So the Jews have even particulars of their laws are different, and there's no similarity at all. So it's not just the ikarim that are different, because you have nations that have essential principles that might be different, but even the details are different. And then shelo levad shedasa Yisraeli mishuna midaso sa'amim. It's not just different. Aval he mishunim gam mikol ha'amim ba'atzmam. They're different from every other nation. Ki adas tavdil osam bein ha'amim b'machaleim u'malbushem anagasam. Also, it affects every aspect of their life. It affects the way what they eat, the way they dress, the way they act. Ad she'idei adas mishunim gam b'chayi ha'anushis mikolam. Also, in the human way, they're different. Chayi ha'anushis. So they go against the gathering, the group thinking that they're, and they don't do the king's work. Even things that don't go against their religion or their laws, they don't do for the king. And all the nations are going to learn. Once you think about the great damage, there's no reason to let them exist. There's no purpose for letting them continue this damaging process. So what is his argument? Let's just summarize the Malbim. The Malbim saying that really Haman's, I think, that Haman's argument is nationalistic, is nationalism. He's trying to say that the Jews are not capable of nationalism. They're not capable of really creating a nationalistic empire. And Haman understood that Achashverosh was politically savvy. He was politically savvy. And one of his main objectives was that the king and the whole kingdom be loyal to him. So Haman was trying to eat away at that idea in Achashverosh. He's trying to show that the unique element of the Jews, or the unique elements of their religion, don't allow them to completely integrate and assimilate into the society of the kingdom, and that's tremendously harmful. And that's why he tries to hint to the idea that they'll affect other nations, meaning other nations, it'll prevent other nations from really truly assimilating. And that was the ultimate goal of Achashverosh, of any king. Every king, president, leader wants the people to feel nationalistic pride and to try to join together and feel a certain loyalty to the kingdom as a whole. So the argument that Haman's making is essentially, it sounds like based on the Malbim, is essentially that they're incapable of complete assimilation because their laws prevent them from doing that, and that's harmful. So that's the nature of his argument. But let's take that a little further. Let's try to understand it in the Psukim. So the main points we just made, there's just two points. Really, one is that he hides the Jews' identity. He doesn't want Ahasuerus to identify with them. And the second point is that he's trying to argue from a nationalistic standpoint that they're harmful, that they're incapable of assimilation. And all the details that he mentions, that the Malbim mentions, are details of what makes the Jews unique in the sense that it doesn't allow them to really join up with the kingdom. They have their own clothes. They eat their own food. So they're really incapable of completely demonstrating loyalty to him and to the kingdom as a whole. And that's damaging to the whole kingdom. But one of the questions that we had, and we'll try to answer it based on this approach, is why doesn't Ahasuerus take the money? So that's one of the questions. And also another interesting is, Val HaMelech Ein Shovel Anicham. So if you look in source number one, at the end it says, he doesn't say that the king should kill them, but he says, Val HaMelech Ein Shovel Anicham. It's kind of a sly way. He says that the king shouldn't really, there's no reason for the king to allow them to exist, to continue to exist. So why does he phrase it that way? Why does he phrase it that way? And what's going on here? So I think with the Malbim's approach and the first idea that we had and the second, we'll try to put everything together. So I think one possibility to the strategy of Haman here is that he was really trying to create a guilt-free way for Ahasuerus to give him permission to destroy the Jews. And he wanted Ahasuerus to give in, but he knew that there were certain elements that might make him feel guilty or might prevent or create resistance on the part of Ahasuerus. So he was really trying to create a guilt-free method for him to do what he wants. So that answers, so if we go through the Psukim and we look at the Malbim, it'll answer all the questions. Because the Psukim show you that A, what we said before, he doesn't identify the nation. And B, he's trying to show, he's not saying that they're enemies of the king, but rather he's saying that, or he's trying to hint that they're not beneficial to the king at all. But he says, Ein shovel anicham, meaning he's not saying that you should kill them. He never says, Ahasuerus, they're your enemies, you should kill them. He says that there's no purpose to their existence, meaning he's trying to make it seem, like you're not going to really be killing them. It's really just that there's no purpose to their existence. And Ein shovel anicham, it's not that they're your enemies, it's just that there's no purpose, they're harmful, let's destroy them. But he's doing it in a very coy way. He's never using the term, he's not using it like you're going to destroy them. He's taking the responsibility. And in fact, that answers why Ahasuerus didn't take the money also. Because why wouldn't he take the money? So according to this approach, he didn't want to feel responsible for killing the Jews. He just wanted Haman to do what he wanted to do. And he wanted to be able to accomplish this in a way Ahasuerus did, or he wanted to give Haman permission, but he said, do what you want. Look at the last pasuk. So why didn't he accept the money? He didn't want any guilt. He didn't want to feel like he was doing this. He said, basically, I'll give you permission, and you can do what you want with them. So we see from this that Haman knew, or Haman understood, the personality of Ahasuerus, and his approach was such that he was trying to create the least amount of resistance, almost a guilt-free way that Ahasuerus would allow this to happen. And the way that he did that was strategic. He tried to demonstrate, or he tries to hide their identity so that he doesn't create any identification on the part of Ahasuerus. He shows that they're really not loyal to him, and he shows, but he never says that they're deserving of death or Ein shovel anicham. He never says, you're going to kill them. He says, I'll take care of it. And that's why Ahasuerus doesn't take the money, because he doesn't want responsibility for this situation. So that was the brilliance of Haman. Haman's brilliance in his strategy was that he needed to create a situation where Ahasuerus would give in to him, and he knew that the best way to do that was in a way where he shows respect to the king, but there's no resistance on the part of the king. It's almost like Ahasuerus at the end of the day could say, listen, I had nothing to do with it. It wasn't me, it was Haman. So that's the method of Haman. That was the method of Haman, to try to convince Ahasuerus to go along with it in a way where he could say to himself, I'm not really responsible. I'm not really doing much, and Haman will take care of it. So that answers all the questions, meaning Haman's hiding of the Jews' identity, and even just mentioning the fact that they were harmful to the kingdom, knew that was the convincing argument to Ahasuerus, but still, Ein shovel anicham. He never says, you should kill them, destroy them. And he doesn't take the money in the end. Why? Because he doesn't want to feel responsible. So Haman made it seem, in the eyes of Ahasuerus, even though Ahasuerus was allowing this to happen, that he wasn't going to ultimately be responsible for the destruction of this people. So that was a brilliant move by Haman. So he was an evil genius. All right, so that's one approach. One approach to the arguments, the convincing arguments of Haman, were to create a guilt-free environment for Ahasuerus. So the second approach...
Isn't there a flaw in this argument, which is that it's very effective in terms of convincing Haman, but in terms of if it doesn't go well, and it does happen, is that Haman ultimately gets blamed because he gives himself a lot of the responsibility.
Yeah, for sure. He does get blamed. He is taken, but Haman knew that Ahasuerus didn't want the responsibility. He knew that Ahasuerus wouldn't go along with it, and he wouldn't be convinced if he felt responsible. He didn't want the it's like hiring, you know, Haman knew that Ahasuerus would have resistance and he didn't want to feel responsible. So you're right. Haman took all the responsibility. In the end, it fell on him. And Ahasuerus it actually benefited the Jews in the end, because Ahasuerus was able to, according to this approach, if he really ultimately felt like he should destroy the Jews, so then in the end, when Haman exposed, so maybe Ahasuerus, you know, would have sided with Haman or still would have continued on. But you see from the fact that Haman was trying to do this in a way where he got his way and Ahasuerus felt guilt-free, it actually ended up assisting the Jews in the end, because Ahasuerus was able to not take blame and feel like he wasn't behind it. It was all Haman. So you're right. But yeah, it was worse for Haman. Haman got the brunt of it because of this. Okay, so let's go on into the Gemara. So the Gemara says a different approach than the Malbim. So the Gemara says, it's Megillah Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, it's source number 4. It says, Yeshno Am Echad. Amar Rava, Leka Diyada Lishna Bisha Kahaman. So there's no one who knew how to do this, how to speak poorly, and to swindle like Haman. He was able to swindle Ahasuerus. So why? He says, Amar Lei, Tanech Linu. So now the Gemara goes into more detail into the arguments back and forth between Haman and Ahasuerus. So he said to Ahasuerus, let's destroy them. So the Gemara is more explicit. So Amar Lei, Mistafina Melokov. I'm afraid, Ahasuerus said back to Haman, I don't want to destroy them. Why? Because I'm afraid of their gods. Deloli Aved be kid the Aved Bekamai. I don't want their god to do to me what was done before me to other kings, like Paro and other kings. So we see from the Gemara that the Gemara is taking a different approach than the Malbim, that the Gemara is saying that in the Medrash, he didn't know what was going on. He knew exactly what was going on. So he was scared. So Amar Lei Yeshno Min HaMitzvos. So Haman said they're not keeping the mitzvos. I don't know how Haman knew that, but he said that. So Amar Lei Isbehu Rabbanan. So Ahasuerus was smart, and he said, what do you mean? There are all these Rabbanan, there are all these rabbis who keep the mitzvos, and maybe because there are these rabbis, the Jews won't be deserving of destruction, and I'll be punished. Amar Lei Am Echad Hin. So his response was, no, they're one nation, meaning you can't treat the Rabbanan differently than the rest of the nation. They're all one nation, and if the whole nation as a whole is not keeping the Torah, so they're going to be punished, and you're not going to get any type of punishment as a result of destroying them. Look at Rashi, source number 5. Isbehu Rabbanan mitshuvasu shel Haman anulimbedim shekach Ahasuerus mashiva. So the Gemara is added filling in the blanks, but the fact that he says Am Echad shows you what the back and forth was. So he says Am Echad was a response to Ahasuerus. He says, what do you mean? There's Rabbanan. So his answer was, no, Am Echad, they're one nation. You can't distinguish between the Rabbanan and the rest of the nation. Shema Tomar Karchani Oseb Malchusecha is the Gemara, source number 4, 3 lines down. He says, maybe you'll say that I'm creating a void in your Malchus, in your kingdom. Mevuzarin Haim Bein Ha'amim. They're scattered. So Rashi, Karchani Oseb Malchusecha Shem Malchus Achas Malea Mehem. Maybe you'll say that it's filled with them, and therefore there's going to be a void. It's going to be negative for your kingdom if we destroy them. So he says, Mevuzarin Haim Bein Ha'amim. No, they're scattered. So if you destroy them, it won't really have a negative effect. It won't be a void. There won't be a void. Shemar Tomar is Hanaominaihu, maybe you get some profit. Mefurad Kepreda Zu Sheena Oseperos. They're like a Preda. I think it means a donkey, but I'm not sure. That they don't bear any fruit. So they don't profit you at all. The Shema Tomar Ika Medinsa Minayu. Maybe they have a separate state. Tamalomar, Bechol Medinos Malchusecha. They're in every state. They don't have their own state. Look at Rashi, the next source sheet. Medinta, Medina Katana, maybe they have a small state. No, the answer is no, they don't. V'dasem shonos mikol am. They're also different in their laws. The lo achli minan. They don't eat with us and from us. They won't eat our food. V'lo nasvi minan. And they won't marry from us. V'lo menasvi lan. They won't give us their daughters and their sons for marriage. V'estaseh amelech enam osim. They don't do the work. And they don't pay the tax. D'mafki l'kula shata b'shabbos hayom. Pesach hayom. They always say that it's Shabbos. We can't work. It's Pesach. So this is Haman's argument to Achashverosh. They're always trying to get out of working for you. They eat and drink, and they degrade the malchus. They're denigrated. Even if a fly falls in one of their drinks, they take it out, and they'll throw out the fly, and they'll drink it. But if the king touches it, they're going to destroy it, and they won't drink it, I guess because of Yain Esach. So they won't even drink it. So the Gemara has a different approach, completely different. Look at Rashi on the next page. Let's just do the rest of the Rashi. They won't marry our women. They don't give taxes. And they say Pesach Yom. Shabbos Yom, Pesach Yom. And we're Asur in Melacha. And we're Asur in Melacha. It's not appropriate to let them continue to live there, to exist. Okay, so the Gemara has a different approach, than the Malbim. So let's just summarize the Gemara. So the first part, there's this back and forth, and I want to give a basic approach to the Gemara. I don't want to go through every single argument, but the first argument is that Achashverosh said, I'm afraid of getting punished by their gods, and the argument is, no, you're not going to be. And then the second is, he tries to show that there's not going to be any damage, any harm, and then at the end, he tries to show that, you know, they're mavaza. They would treat you worse than they would treat a fly that fell into their cup. So what exactly is the difference? What is this argument? According to the Gemara, what's the subtlety, the greatness of Haman's ability to convince Achashverosh? So that's the question. Okay, so there's a Marsha on this in source number 6. So I think, you know what, I think we're going to skip it, but basically he goes through all the drushos. He just shows you, not so interesting, but he shows you all the drushos of why the Gemara is able to learn out the different ideas. Like why it says yesh, no, instead of yesh, and why does it say am echad? It could have just said am. So he goes through all the drushos, how the Gemara is learning out the limudim. So what is the approach, the Gemara's approach to the argument? So it sounds like the Gemara is saying, more in the lines of, I don't know, somebody on the phone line said, that really Haman understood, it's a different approach, Haman understood the psychology of Achashverosh, and his strategy wasn't to make Achashverosh feel guilt-free, but was to convince him that the Jews are his enemy. So how did he do that? So first, he knew that Achashverosh was very paranoid. That's one of the key characteristics throughout the Megillah. Achashverosh's paranoia is really recognizable throughout the Megillah. I mean, you have the story of Bigson and Seresh, which was legitimate, but he was the king, and people were always trying to kill him, trying to destroy him. He was a paranoid person. So that's one of the ideas that that Esther also played on, his paranoia. So Haman also knew this. Everyone knew this, but Haman knew this. So the first idea, or the first element of his argument, was to try to calm his fears, to try to make sure that Achashverosh, his paranoia of being dethroned, would be taken care of. So that's the nature of the first argument, is that Achashverosh was scared, and Haman was trying to allay those fears. He was trying to demonstrate that you shouldn't, your paranoia is unjustified. Then the second move was to try to show that there's no damage to killing them. They're not going to harm you. It was almost neutral. He's going from a resistance of Achashverosh to killing the Jews because he's afraid, his paranoia, to the idea of neutrality, that the Jews, they're not going to cause any damage if you destroy them. And then he takes that argument all the way to the other extreme. He shows Achashverosh that they're your enemies, that they don't really respect you at all. In fact, they would treat a fly more respectful in terms of throwing it out and drinking the cup than you touching their wine. So the greatness, according to this approach, the greatness of Haman wasn't trying to create a guilt-free environment for Achashverosh, but it was the opposite. He was trying to convince Achashverosh of the Jews were his enemies, and he was able to overcome the resistance. First, so the Gemara is showing you a step-by-step. So first Haman recognized that Ahasuerus should have resistance because of his paranoia, because of his fear of being dethroned. And then the second move was to try to show that there's no harm. You don't lose anything by destroying them. And then finally he shows you should destroy them, that you should kill the Jews. And it's really up to you to kill the Jews. So that's a different approach. So with that approach, though, we still have to answer the questions, meaning why didn't Ahasuerus take the money? That was one of the questions that we had, right? So what exactly is going on over there? So we'll answer that. The Gemara answers that, and we'll see what the Gemara says, okay? So two different approaches to Haman's argument. Either he was being sly and deceptive by hiding the Jew's identity and making it guilt-free, or he was being... He was tremendous in his arguments, and he was able to take somebody like Ahasuerus, who had resistance to destroying the Jews, and make it clear to him that you should destroy the Jews because they're your enemies. So that was the greatness of Haman, of his evil nature. So one other point. So let's just so go to source number 7. We're just going in order of the Gemara. So the Gemara takes up the Pesukim one by one. So this is an interesting point, a side point, but it's in the story. So the Gemara says, "Amar Reish Lakish, source number 7. Golav yadu lifnei misha amar v'haya olam she'asad Haman lishkol shkal ma'yisrael, lefichach hikdim shiklan lishkalav. V'hainu disnan be'echad ba'adar mashmien ala shkalam ba'al kilayim." So Hashem knew that Haman was going to try to pay for the lives of the Jews with money, with shkalam, and therefore he introduced the idea of shkalam before, and echad ba'adar, on the first of Adar, we announced that the Jews should bring their machtis ha'shekel to the mikdash, and they used the shekel in order for the Jews to pay for the korbanos at Tzibor, and also on kilayim, that it's time to uproot any type of mixed seeds in your yard, in your field. Look in source number 8. Mashmian based in machrizin shaviu shkalim mikdash al kilayim shigidlu hazraim ktsas venitza nikar veokrin osan misadosen bachrazus based in. So the Gemara says here that there's a medrash that the shkalim of Hashem predate the shkalim of Haman. And if you look in there, there's a Tosos on Daf Tesayin Amud Aleph. Look in source number 9, and I messed up on the source sheet, so I'll read you the whole thing. It says, "V'dachi asara alfei kikari kaspa shemati sheasara alfei kikar kesef olin chati shekel lechol echam Yisrael sheyu sheish mos elef kishotziu mimetraim." So the 10,000 shkalim are is really a chati shekel is equal to half shekel in value for every Jew that left Mitzrayim. V'amar sheyitin kol pidyonam. He was trying to redeem them. He was trying to pay for them, Haman. There's a relationship between Haman's shkalim and the amount of Jews that left Mitzrayim. So what exactly is this? Before we move on to the last point, which ties into the first element of the shir, this is kind of a side point. So what is this idea? What's this concept of the shkalim? That the shkalim of Haman were predated by the shkalim of God. So this is a hard one. I had an approach. Feel free to discuss. Maybe everyone, you can have your own approach here. There's no like clear idea. But I think the concept that I was thinking, that I was contemplating, was tied to monetization. The idea of monetization: when you pay for somebody, when you say somebody's life is worth a certain amount, so it's really it's a degradation of man. It's really saying that man's looked at almost like an asset, like an animal. And even though there's a principle of avdus in the Torah, but avdus, you're paying for the person's value as a worker. But Haman was paying for the lives of the Jews. He was saying that their lives are worth this amount of money, and he was trying to almost make them like animals, like the Nazis made the Jews. It's a way to make people feel subhuman when you attach a monetary value to their lives, and you say your life is worth this, and we're going to destroy you if I pay this amount. I'm going to destroy you. So just maybe the idea of the shkalim predating is that the Jews had a. That Haman would want this to get out. He would want this knowledge to get out. It was known. The Jews knew that Haman tried to pay for their destruction, and that in itself could have a tremendously negative effect on the Jews. We see by the Nazis in the Holocaust, the Jews did look at themselves as kind of weak, and that whole subhuman idea that the Nazis presented, and Haman was also Amalek, that whole subhuman idea was embraced somewhat by the Jews. The Jews viewed themselves in that way, and they didn't fight back. So maybe the idea of the shkalim of God predating the shkalim of Haman is that idea that the Jews could have a different association with shkalim, that they shouldn't look at shkalim as almost a dehumanization of them, but they should recognize the idea of the shkalim predating Haman shkalim is that they should understand that the idea of shkalim is really a sign of their dedication to God, and God chose them when they left Mitzrayim and got the Torah. So the idea is that Hashem gave the Jews a method to stop this, to stop the effect of the knowledge that Haman wanted to pay for their destruction. Hashem gave them a method to prevent that from affecting them psychologically and philosophically. Because a lot of times when a person sees themselves in that way, if you see yourself as just money or like an animal, so you're not going to do tshuva, you're going to be dejected, you're not going to try to fight. So the idea was that, the idea that Gemara is saying is that Hashem anticipated this, meaning that he gave the Jews a way to have an association of shkalim that would give them philosophical meaning, that would give them the idea, the recognition that they're really the Am HaNivchar, and that there's a philosophical meaning that they have, and prevent them from being dejected by hearing that Haman's buying them, buying their themselves. Okay, so that's kind of a side point.
Yeah, go ahead. Did you say it was like,
the money? No, I think it's just an idea that I think it's an. It could be. I'm not sure. It's a good question. I mean, I think it was more bechira on the part of Haman that he chose to do this, but I think the hashgacha was that Hashem allowed or gave the Jews opportunities to not be affected by this. Meaning, they could have been like the Jews in the Holocaust. They could have been completely dejected, and they could have thought of themselves as just cattle. You know, they're being bought by Haman. So the idea was that they shouldn't think of themselves like that. Hashem gives them an opportunity philosophically and through the idea of Shkalim to understand what their value is, that their value is in terms of serving God and Avodas Hashem. And they're really, so really the idea is to prevent them from being broken down psychologically and mentally, which is really what the Nazis and Haman, who was, you know, a predecessor of the Nazis, because he was also a Malek, that's what they try to do. That's their method. They try to make the Jews subhuman, and then only through that method do they destroy the Jews. So one last point in the share. Last point. So we asked the question, based on the Gemara's approach, why did Achashverosh not take the money? I think there's an obvious answer, but let's look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, Mashal d'Achashverosh, v'Haman l'ma davar doma. Sorry, start in source number 9, because I made a mistake in the sheet. It says, the last line, it says, V'yomar melch l'Haman akesem nasan lech v'am lasos bo kato b'necha. Amar Rabbi Abba. So Rabbi Abba says, based on this idea that Achashverosh rejected the money, Mashal d'Achashverosh v'Haman l'ma davar doma, what's it similar to? L'shnei b'nei Adam, they're two men. One person has a mound in his field. One has a ditch. The one who has a ditch. I wish I could buy this mound with money. And the one who has the tail has the mound. He wants the ditch. They get together. So the one who owns the ditch says to the one who owns the mound, sell me your mound. So he says, take it for free. So he just gives it away for free. So Rashi says in source number 11, so what does this teach you? It teaches you that Achashverosh also wanted to destroy the Jews. And he didn't, so he also wanted to destroy the Jews. He also wanted what Haman wanted. And if you look at the Marasha says, Mashal d'Achashverosh l'echachei elotel, d'ima shahaman ratza litain lo aseres alofim, d'ma shahaman ratza litain lo aseres alofim, v'hu amarle akesem nasun loch, v'am lasos, why does Achashverosh reject the money? Hu mamish k'mashal machar litei lecha, v'hu amarle tol b'chinam. So he says, it's the same thing as, sell me your mound, and he says, I'll give it to you for free. V'dima s'Achashverosh l'bal atel, shehu b'dima n'Yisrael, sh'loya chavitz b'hem Achashverosh. So Achashverosh owns the mount. He has no use for the Jews. V'dimas Haman l'Baal Charetz. Haman is the one, the Baal Charetz. V'aguma shu chafetz betel ashlicha b'gumo. He wants to throw the mound into the ditch. U'bo niskayim chofer gumotz bo yipo. So Marsha explains the mashal. But what is the idea? What's the idea? The idea, I think, is that Achashverosh, Haman was able to convince Achashverosh that the Jews were his enemies, and Achashverosh had the same desires Haman. It's only they came about it from through different angles, and it sounds like from the mashal that Haman was more active. So Haman was the active one, and Achashverosh was passive. It was less conscious. It was more unconscious. So the mashal is showing you that why Achashverosh didn't take the money. The idea of him not taking the money is that underneath Achashverosh, he really hated the Jews, and he had the same hatred, the same level of hatred to the Jews as Haman did, but he was passive about it. He had a passive aggression. And Haman had the active aggression. Haman goes out. He's the Baal Charetz. He's the one who goes out and says, let me buy your tail. And Achashverosh is the one who says, you can have it for free. Meaning, Achashverosh's hatred for the Jews was the same as Haman. except he went about it in a different way. He was more passive, whereas Haman was more active. Or one was more conscious, Haman was more conscious, and Ahasuerus was more unconscious. It was more hidden. It was under the surface. So the Gemara explains why he didn't take the money. So let me just summarize. There's really two main approaches in the whole share. There's two main approaches and one side point with the Shkalim. The two main approaches, which both take up the question of how did Haman convince Ahasuerus to kill the Jews, and also why did Ahasuerus take the money? So the first approach is the Malbim. The Malbim's approach is that Haman's intelligence was such that he created a guilt-free environment to Ahasuerus, who's constantly showing Ahasuerus, Ein Shovel Anichem, that you're not really destroying them actively, I'm going to do everything. And he doesn't identify the Jews, so he keeps it hidden so that Ahasuerus won't have resistance to it. And in the end, Ahasuerus doesn't take the money because he doesn't want the guilt for destroying the Jews. He wants to just leave it up to Haman. So he's willing to go along, but he also leaves it up to Haman to do everything. So that's the first approach. And then there's the Gemara, which is almost the opposite. The Gemara is saying that Haman's brilliance was in taking a resistant individual like Ahasuerus to destroying the Jews because of his paranoia and trying to allay those fears and moving the argument to the point, to the element where he shows Ahasuerus, he convinces Ahasuerus that the Jews are absolutely his enemies. So that was the brilliance of Haman, that he was able to do that. And based on that, why did Ahasuerus take the money? Not take the money, sorry. So the Gemara says that really it shows you that in the end of the day, Haman was so convincing that Ahasuerus hated the Jews as much as he did. And Ahasuerus didn't take the money because he ultimately wanted the destruction of the Jews as much as Haman did. It's just that he went about it in a more passive way. Haman was more active. And the last point is the Shkalim idea. I think the Shkalim idea is that Haman tries to dehumanize the Jews, and he wanted it to get out. He wanted people to know that he tried to buy the Jews' lives. And what ends up happening is that the Gemara says that Hashem predated Haman's Shkalim with his Shkalim. So I think that's a concept that he wanted the Jews to have a way or a system of avoiding the dejection and the feeling of dehumanization from hearing that Haman was trying to buy their lives and really trying to destroy them with this money. So instead, they should associate and have a positive idea of Shkalim and recognize that Shkalim really represent or reflect their relationship with God and how they're servants of God. So they should understand their value through Shkalim and not look at themselves as dehumanized through the Shkalim. Because when you think of yourself as cattle, as subhuman, it ends up affecting your ability to do tshuva, to fight back. So Hashem created or gave the Jews an opportunity to avoid being affected negatively by that and avoid that. Okay, so that's the end of the shiur. So everyone, thanks for calling in and have a happy Purim. Thank you.